Right, thank you very much. I guess to begin here, I'm afraid in prepping for this, I had to break with two rather long-standing habits now that I've gotten into. I think the first is thanking the organizers, because I think that would be a little bit self-congratulatory here, or half self-congratulatory, rather. The other is has been a little bit of a spiel where I've been presenting a different paper. I've been pretending for the last little while to be an expert on Central and Eastern Europe on EU external relations here. So I'm and that really was a fantastic little ruse while it lasted. But I'm delighted here to say that we're back in the world of political economy and something a little bit closer to what I normally do. So the ruse is over, and I'm here to talk to you today about coordinated wage setting and the Dutch model in the context of economic and monetary union. And in essence, my piece argues 3 points really here. So that economic and monetary union, so the euro places much greater emphasis upon wage setting as a tool for macroeconomic management here. But the conditions and the pressures which it also introduces may well be inhospitable to the institutions that actually deliver it. Having said that, contrary to expectations, the euro hasn't undermined the institutions coordinating wage setting in the Netherlands. Having said that, they do accentuate some of the more nasty characteristics of the model and so a few of its inbuilt pathologies here, really. So in essence, what the paper argues then makes a relatively small point and a much larger point about why we need to be bothered about it. So, to get the big question here out of the way here is why we're concerned about this is that under the euro, governments generally have fewer tools for dealing with macroeconomic shocks here and competitiveness issues in the shorter term as well. So by definition, currency devaluation is impossible in the context of a currency that covers quite a bit of the European Union. Given the ECB's outlook on the integrity of the currency as well, competitive devaluations against currencies external to the euro is really not an option. Countercyclical spending has usually been another tool used to address shocks, competitive issues, and so on and so forth. And there's a raft of literature under EMU that deals with limitations and ineffective controls on government spending in the past. Having said that, those constraints to a certain extent have bitten, and I think looking ahead with what we've seen over the course of the last year to 18 months, I think we can only expect more constraints on counter-cyclical spending as well here. And what all of this means then is that wage levels are one of the chief remaining tools then for adjusting for competitiveness issues and adjusting for asymmetric shocks. So in other words, by way of adjusting wage levels by way of an internal devaluation or the reverse here. And in essence, though, coordination in this context becomes rather a lot more difficult. So economic signals on inflation, on bank rates, and so on and so forth are far more erratic when the social partners sit down and arrange an agreement. There are also fewer pressures to coordinate, to control on other issues, such as inflation. There's a vast literature talking about social pacts in particular in a number of countries outside of the Netherlands that explains their failure to continue to coordinate as a result of of having met the convergence criteria and no longer having the threat of being excluded from the single currency. And there's also the issue of strain on the institutions that that actually deliver this from greater emphasis being placed upon them as well. In a number of instances, they're not designed to be relied upon to this extent, and there are strains that are placed upon them as a result. We're also concerned about this because it has a number of broader implications, because these aren't single-purpose institutions that actually deliver that. So greater emphasis and greater strain placed upon these institutions need to concern us because the effects of the social partnership in the areas of social policy for the purposes of conducting social pacts and adjusting and reworking other issues in public policy here today. Having said all of that,
at least superficially, then we haven't seen these strengths played out as we might have expected in the Netherlands. By a number of accounts, the Dutch model does still continue to function effectively and does still coordinate effectively, adjusting for asymmetric shocks and in delivering wage restraint. And by a number of accounts, it does this extremely well in the context of EMU. The system remains relatively flexible, and the government still does have a constructive role. But the trouble is, though, that one of the things I'd put out to explain this, then, is the corporatist microfoundations of the system. So, in other words, an entrenched history of concertation between the social partners and with government. The other issue that's put forward to explain this as well is the timing of of specific reforms to the model. So, the institutions that manage wage setting in the Netherlands in their current incarnation date from reforms in the early 1980s. So, by the time the convergence criteria was applied and pressure was applied, these institutions were already well-entrenched and were already well-established. And for bonus points for the Dutch model here as well, were designed for the sorts of pressures that would come about under EMU, if not specifically for EMU itself. And as a result, we haven't seen a breakdown of the system when actually adopting the euro. So we do have unions that have a relatively strong role. The employers also have a relatively important role in the process and are crucially still in favor of it as well. Ditto government. Now, that's not to say that negotiations have necessarily been particularly pleasant. In fact, they have been more bitter in the context of EMU. Having said that, the process has continued here to a very large extent, and it stands in marked contrast with other countries which have attempted to conjure something rather similar here. So we see, by contrast, a breakdown of the social partnership in Spain and Greece and so on and so forth here. But having said that, it's not all rosy here as well. While we have the model continue to function more or less as it has for some time now, we do have some issues with some inbuilt characteristics of the model which are accentuated by the single currency. So in other words, we have very little new that's been introduced into the Dutch model, but rather we have some issues here which are now rather more acute. Now, the key issue here really is the emphasis upon wage restraint and cost competitiveness in the model at the expense of other sources of competitiveness, whether that be product image or productivity here as well. And the issue here is that absent an emphasis on other sources of competitiveness, this particular model has emphasized growth in low-wage and part-time work, and particularly in lower value-added sectors, quite often in lower value-added services. And this stands in marked contrast. I mean, I am dealing a little bit in caricature here, but it stands in marked contrast, for example, with the German model, which has emphasized productivity rather a lot, and the specialization that has been in higher value-added goods and services here. And the particular challenge here that for a number of authors, what they pointed out is that wage restraint hasn't improved export competitiveness in the Dutch model. The growth has generally tended to be in sheltered sectors, and this is a problem for a small and relatively open economy. Another bigger issue here that comes up as well is that the way they've gone about doing this, where growth has been in lower value-added services in particular, is that it may well lock in this pattern of low wage growth because productivity benchmarking is much more challenging in lower value-added services here. And this is a significant issue then in the longer term from a lower wage competition both within and without the Eurozone. So we consider that they sit in essentially in a free trade area with a number of trading partners in Central and Eastern Europe, in Southern Europe, which already have this this particular specialization. So looking longer term, it does raise a number of big concerns about the Dutch economy's ability to grow by emphasizing growth in lower value-added production here. Now, to consider a little bit more broadly than the conclusions, which is that in the context of economic and monetary union, the Dutch model has continued to function in a lot of the ways in which it traditionally has. So coordinated wage setting is, in fact, very, very healthy in in the Netherlands at right this minute. Having said that, as we talked about, it brings with it a number of unhealthy side effects, and particularly as we're casting about here, looking for broader implications, when we have the Netherlands that's been considered throughout the 1990s as a model for reforming countries in the Eurozone, when we consider these unhealthy side effects, it raises a number of particular concerns as, you know, as a model for other European economies. There are a handful of things to recommend it. So, extending protections to non-core or workers is something that might be appealing and that recommends it as a model for other Eurozone economies. And it's done something that a number of other or more traditionally neo-corporatist countries have generally failed to do, so which is to stimulate growth in lower value-added areas, which generally hasn't been the case in Germany, for example. But considering the implications of having this front and center, as well considering what actually explains the success of the model and actually coordinating wage settings, so in other words, long-entrenched institutions and the difficulty in replicating that, it raises serious concerns about the Netherlands as a model for other reforming countries as well in the current context. So, and with that, I do thank you for your attention.